Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the main streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm sitting here in Southern California, and it's an absolutely beautiful day, and I got a hell of a podcast for you today. I called up my old buddy, Sean Waltman, X-Pac. I said, hey, man. I said, I'm fixing to go into production of Broken Skull Challenge. I've been trying to bank up some shows, and I need a show for tomorrow. I said, can you help a brother out? Sean had to take a trip. He got back into town, said he could come by, and so he came over today from the valley, and we shot the breeze for a couple of hours. So you're going to hear today's podcast, and we kept it family-friendly. Catch him on the next Tuesday show as well, or maybe I'll delay that a week. But I had a great time just sitting here and no agenda, just shooting the breeze about pro wrestling and life in general with Sean. And he's kicking ass. He has his own podcast and his own broadcast show called X-Pac 12360. You can check that out on iTunes, SoundCloud, however. He drops the information in the podcast. That's how you can listen to his show. But it was good to sit down and just shoot the breeze and talk about the business of pro wrestling with one of the boys that was in the crew, part of the roster during the Attitude Era, in the trenches, in the thick of things, right when the Monday Night Wars were hot and heavy. And, man, all those guys from Minnesota were – they all had real good minds for the wrestling business, and Sean is no different. Real deep thinking, been around, established veteran, different take on psychology, getting over, but just a fun guy to talk to and a great personality as well. So thanks, Sean, for coming all the way from the valley into the mean streets of Marina Del Rey. It was good seeing you in person. God dang, a guy looks like $1 million. Looking good, he's feeling good, and check out his show. My conversation with Sean comes up in just a second. But before we get into my conversation with Sean, I'll tell you what. God dang, right before Sean rolled up, I seen the UPS guy walking to my door. And I said, man, what the hell is this? And the guy was carrying a box. And I took the box from the guy. I came back inside. I got out my cold steel Broken Skull pocket knife, because everybody should always have a pocket knife. Cut the tape down the center, opened the box, and I'll be danged if there wasn't an envelope with my name on it, Steve Austin. And in that box was 3 bottles of tequila. Holy smokes, who in the wide, wide world of sports could have sent me, Steve Austin, a global icon and a national treasure, 3/5 of tequila? Turns out it was my old buddy Bryce Yang from 2K Sports. Bryce obviously has a few connections to the liquor industry and had too much liquor on hand, and he called me a few days ago. Actually, it was a couple of weeks ago, and he called me and he said, hey, man, he goes, I got tequila coming out of my ears. Do you want any of this stuff? I always hear you talking about Broken Skull Ranch margaritas on the podcast. If you're interested in some tequila, I can send some your way. Well, hell, that don't take a rocket scientist to figure out if somebody's got some extra tequila, whiskey, vodka, rum, gin, beer, wine. You get the picture. I ain't going to pass it up. And this was some good-ass tequila. So anyway, I got 3/5 of tequila from Bryce Yang at 2K Sports. Bryce, I appreciate it very much. He actually put in a letter and wrote in here, please find enclosed Silver Ultra, which is amazing for sipping on ice and however else you like to drink it with. Silver is great for margaritas. Reposado, which is a little oaky due to being aged in barrels, also good for margaritas. If you're into this, they have Añejo I could get you too. All are great for sitting by the pool. Let me know what you think, Bryce. I'll tell you what I think, Bryce. Thanks a bunch for the damn tequila. I'll take that other bottle off your hands, by the way, while I'm talking about it. Big shout out. Appreciate it very much. And while I'm looking at this letterhead, here's a shout out. Don't forget to pre-order the WWE 2K18 video game with Seth freaking Rollins on the cover. Be like no one, it says there on the advertisement. Check out 2K's WWE 2K18 video game pre-order now. Well, that was an unofficial piece of business. Thank you very much, Bryce. On another story for you that I have just coming in, I was talking to my brother-in-law in Sparks, Nevada just the other day and had a chance to come upon a mule deer tag in a unit in Nevada. I was able to, it was a landowner permit, so I was able to get a landowner permit for purchase. I had to pay for it, but I tried to put in for some tags last year for a sheep. I think I put in for an antelope and something else, but I didn't get drawn. So I had a chance to get a landowner tag, and it looks like yours truly will be able to go on a mule deer hunt up there in Nevada between October 5th and November 5th. And since I finished filming Broken Skull Challenge on the first part of September, I'll be able to go up there and help him scout a little bit, get to know the lay of the land. Nevada is unbelievable because about 92% of it is public land. So that is a lot of land to traverse. And if you ever get on the computer and look up hunting units in Nevada, you can see how they have that state sectioned off for all the different units. It's amazing. Hell, I was on 2,000 acres at the Broken Skull Ranch in South Texas. These guys are on hundreds of thousands of acres in these units that make up the state of Nevada. So I'm extremely excited about drawing a mule deer tag, and I'm looking forward to getting involved with the scouting and looking forward to doing the hunt. I don't care if I get anything or not. I want to be able to take my Kawasaki mule up there, ride that thing around, have my binoculars, and just be outdoors. So I'm excited about the opportunity this year to get out to Nevada rather than South Texas. Well, let me follow that up. I have a hunting trip in South Texas, 25 miles away from the Broken Skull Ranch. I'll be hunting with my neighbors in the first 2 weeks of December. So I'm looking forward to getting down to South Texas for a deer hunt, whitetail. I'm not probably even going to hunt for whitetail. I'll probably just sit there in the deer stand and enjoy myself. But those are some cool things that got coming up. As far as something that wasn't cool that just came up, I tell you what, most of you people know that I had a ranch in South Texas, myself and my illustrious wife, Kristen. Well, we sold that ranch about 4 months ago, and we packed up all of our stuff, put it in boxes, and we moved it out here to Southern California. It's right here at 317 Gimmick Street. And yesterday my wife says to me, "Hey man, why don't we finally go over there and start getting that place organized and take all the stuff out of the boxes?" Me being the king of procrastination, I said, "I really need to research for a podcast I got coming up. I got to have a conversation with the guy that recreated the 1928 Tour de France, Phil Kogan, who is also the host for Amazing Race. He went over there and made a documentary, and I really got to bring myself up to speed on this guy and do some research. Fascinating documentary called La Tour. He's going to be my guest coming up very shortly. I'm talking to him tomorrow, so I tried to use that as an out. And my wife said, "You can stay up late and research all you want, but we need to get over and take care of those boxes." Well, when my wife uses that tone, I figured I could put off the research and use my lower back and move the boxes and unpack all of our stuff, all of our signs, and all of our junk out of the boxes according to my wife's wishes. So all day yesterday, we was over here taking stuff out of boxes that I never ever wanted to pack up anyway when we sold the ranch. We got all that stuff out. And now that I have this place painted, I'm going to hang some of my signs up and make this the ultimate man cave. I'm not going to put everything up because it looked too cluttery. I don't want to do that. I want to keep it cool. But I was forced into unpacking all that stuff. But you know what? It was cathartic, if you will. It felt good to get all that stuff, family friendly, out of the boxes and see exactly what we got. Towards the end, some of the boxes weren't marked. My wife marked all of them. We knew it was all boxes, but on those few of them that weren't marked up, it was almost like Christmas time when I was a kid, wondering what in the hell could it be in this next box. It was all the stuff that we unpacked from the ranch. So yesterday, I spent all day unpacking boxes, and the thing about it was, I had an invite to go out on the Pacific Ocean when my buddy, my partner that owns Podcast One, Norm Pattis, sent me an email, hey man, we're taking the boat out. I don't know if they went to Catalina or whatever, but a lot of times Norm would just send an email. Everybody piles on this big 60-foot boat that goes 60 miles an hour, has two diesel engines, two bedrooms and two baths, or two heads underneath, a galley, and gets on the boat, and we go hauling ass across the Pacific Ocean. Norm's blaring the music, jamming while he's driving the boat. Every now and then he lets me drive it. So I didn't get a chance to go out on the boat. But because I've been on this strict keto diet, getting ready for Broken Skull Challenge, which we start filming next Tuesday, I was going to take my wife out to eat, but I've been avoiding alcohol ever since I started this diet. But I figured the guy that's helping me with my diet said once a week I could have a cheat meal. So I figured I would take my lovely wife out, who made me work my ass off unpacking all those boxes, and take her to this club that we belong to. So we go to the club, and I see this big, long table of people. And I always try to go in there pretty incognito. And so I avoid eye contact with the big-ass table of people, but we're sitting just a couple of feet away from them. I never make eye contact because I figure someone's going to recognize me, and that's the reason we go there, because I don't want to be recognized. And it turns out Norm and them had came in and decided to go eat, and it was Norm at the damn table. Hell, I damn kayfabed him, and it was my damn buddy. So he came over to the table and said hello, and we caught up and shot the breeze for a little bit. And that was pretty much basically my weekend. What an exciting weekend that was, because packed into that weekend of excitement was also my first endeavor into Macy's to get a bunch of camouflage shorts for shooting the Broken Skull Challenge. I've been trying to round up all these different patterns of camouflage shorts, but hell, most of the time the normal stuff at the damn gimmick store doesn't fit me. So it's hard finding clothes to wear for the Broken Skull Challenge. So my wife went shopping again today to get 15 more pairs of shorts, which I got to go home and try on as soon as I get through with this podcast, so we can get ready. And I'm looking forward to the Broken Skull Challenge this year. This is the fifth year that we've been around, so I'm looking for nothing but high levels of exertion and lots of badass men and lots of badass women coming out there and giving their best and showing the world what they're made of. It's the toughest damn show on television. I stand by that, and I'm looking forward to getting those cameras rolling. I'm going to have my camper all set up. I got my weight system set up. I got three Kawasaki mules out there. I got my four-wheeler, Kawasaki dirt bike. I got a little scooter. I got all kinds of toys out there. I'll be so busy working and podcasting, I won't get a chance to enjoy it all, but I'm looking forward to getting out there in the desert and putting on the baddest damn show on television. Coming, I believe, in September to CMT. But anyway, before we get to Sean Waltman and buy this podcast, I have to say thank you to everyone of the sponsors who let me open up two cans of Audio Whoop Ass for you free every single week, and that's Geico. I know everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea for you. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to Geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to-do you do today.
Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new amazing app.
This one's a game changer.
There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more.
Plus every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen.
And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more.
So download our one-of-a-kind new app and see for yourself.
Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcast1.com.
The Steve Austin Show.
The Steve Austin Show.
Good afternoon. My guest today needs no introduction, but I have to introduce you to him because it's not television. It's a podcast, and you can only hear his voice. My guest today is Shane Walton, part of the old WWE faction Generation X from the Altitude Era.
Ha 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 Shane Walton.
Dude, I had to rib you. Sean Waltman is my guest today, X-Pac. Host of his own podcast. Well, actually, it's a broadcast. What do you call
it? It's a little of both. Whatever. People, like, some people like to shy away from the term podcast. I embrace it.
Why are people shying away
from I don't know.
It's like it's a four-letter word that starts with P.
Yeah, it's, come on, it's 2017, for crying out loud.
I read it, Howard Stern didn't think much of podcast, or podcasting may be in the vein of trying to become a broadcaster or a radio personality. He wasn't very high on it, but hell, I have a good time doing my damn podcast.
Yeah,
but again, sometimes you say that, and people look at you like you're from another planet. What's a podcast? Some people actually still tell me.
Sure, but I guess it's just because there's such a wide variety of podcasts out there of different.
Well, it seems like everybody has one. But,
yeah.
You know, man, if that's, we're trying to roll family friendly, so I could use this show on either, you know, either Unleashed or the Tuesday family friendly show. But you know, more power to anybody who wants to have a platform. You know, whether you download it on their website or whatever. You know,
sure. Shit.
Excuse me. This will be a hard one. Anytime I start hanging around one of the guys and he speaks a similar language as me, it seemed to loosen the parameters a little bit. But, you know, man, so, you know, people enjoy the fact that they can, hey, man, pick up a couple of microphones, have their own show, talk about whatever subject matter they're going to talk about. And it's a podcast.
And you know, people, like, you know, will say, oh, there's too many podcasts out there. And yes, it's fairly oversaturated right now at podcasts, but you pick the ones you like, and the good ones rise to the top, and the other ones, you know, are just kind of there.
Yeah, same thing with television.
Sure.
There's a lot of stuff on TV. I don't like everything. I just watch what I want to watch.
But, you know, last time I was here, I hadn't really done my first episode even yet. And so, like, I've learned a lot, man. And honestly, the advice you gave me early on is some of the best advice I've gotten.
Trade secrets,
yeah. And really, all it is putting in the work, doing the homework, being prepared.
Hey, I wanted to say thank you.
For what?
For inviting me to be on your show.
You know what, Steve? I was going to mention it to you, but our 1 year is coming up, and I was going to save it for that, and I really wanted to be as good as I possibly could be before I had you on. Please forgive me. I come on, man. I know it's not that I know you do. I know you're not stingy with your time when it comes to that. I just wanted to make sure, you know, I hadn't.
Just putting it out there. It's only been a year.
Wow.
I've been waiting on you for an hour. You show up for the podcast over here at 317 Gimmick Street. And so now I got to give you more grief for not inviting me on your podcast.
Yeah.
I hate to force the issue. I don't want to force myself on. If you don't want me as a guest, Sean, let me rephrase that. If you don't want me as a guest, Shane, you ain't got to have me on.
Wow. Chael Sonnen did the same thing to me. But actually, he bailed me out. He bailed me out. Somebody no-showed me. I'll tell you who no-showed me off the air. But, and so, like, last minute, I'm like, because I just did his a couple weeks before that. I'm like, hey, man, so-and-so no-showed me. Can you make the save? He was right outside MSG getting ready to do publicity for his fight with Vanderlei. And he come on for, what, 20 minutes? But he did give me, you know,
give me
some grief over not inviting him on the show. And it's, you know, honestly, Steve, what it is. Yes.
We need a camera roll.
Yeah. What it is I know how valuable everyone's time is to them, and I don't like imposing on people, man.
Dude, that's the same way I feel about it. Half my buddies is like, you know, a lot of them have already been on the show. But like, I could talk to you or Kevin Nash or anybody damn near, you know, once a week if I wanted to, just because it'd be fun to. Because I enjoy talking to my friends. But I don't want to call someone up and say, hey, man, will you do my podcast?
Right.
Because then it's like, hey, man, you don't want to push the envelope of your friendship. It's, you know, some of my tightest buds.
Yes.
It's like, hey, man, you know.
They're the ones I have the hardest time asking.
Exactly. Because, I mean, you have such a bond with them. You know, a lot of what you speak is, it's always good. It's cool to be on someone's podcast and be open or someone have good questions. But, hey, you know, guys that are buds, you know, most stuff you say is kayfabe anyway.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
We know how to trade secrets. Hey, but, you know, I originally called Sean Waltman. I got the ribs over. I originally called Sean and said, hey, man, I said, I'm basically going to production of Broken Skull Challenge. And I said, I had a lot of fun, you know, back in the day. I would break down some of my own matches.
Yeah.
And then Bailey came over a few weeks ago, and she was a guest, and we talked about everything. And then we rolled her match from NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn with the Legit Boss, Sasha Banks, who I would love to have on the podcast one of these days. I'm looking forward to talking to her. She wants to be a guest. I just want to wait till they pass back through Los Angeles. But we watched her match. And, man, I was just sitting there kind of, you know, talking about
yeah.
it. And she was, you know, kind of chipping in. And it was awesome. So I originally talked to Sean about coming over and watching a few matches. But then I also sent out a tweet on my Twitter account, Steve Austin BSR. And, Sean, your handle on Twitter is?
At The Real X-Pac.
At The Real X-Pac. So I said, hey, man, if you got questions for At The Real X-Pac, send them to questions at steveaustinshow.com. And people send in a lot of questions. So I thought we'd start the round with a couple of Q&As.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'll do the Q's and you do the A's. You ready?
Yep.
Do we need to break the ice anymore?
No, I think we're good, man.
Several times. You caught it and you bobbled it the last time. It didn't hit the floor.
Strolled in here 45 minutes late.
You haven't invited me on your podcast. You're from the Altitude Era, Generation X. Shane Waterman is my guest today. See, homework.
Very
good stuff.
It's prep.
It's all that prep, Shane.
Yeah.
I'm kidding you. Hey, Steve, love the show. I miss him crazy, packed and fired up crowds from back in the day when you and guys like Sean were around. Not the same these days. Good shows, but not the same. Quick question for Sean about his last incident at LAX. Please ask him if he felt people did not believe his story. People close to him as a fan and hearing him tell his side, I totally did, just came off as genuine. To me, he really comes off as a brutally honest guy. His adversity and overcoming his problems is a truly inspiring story, and much respect to one of the all-time underrated performers in the business. Thanks. And that came from KT.
That's very cool, KT, to say that.
So, man, I remember I called you.
You did. You called me. It was on a Wednesday. I was just about ready to go in and do a polygraph test. For the very reason KT asked the question, because I didn't blame anyone for doubting my story, because it's such a silly story. And who thinks that United States Customs and Border Protection, somebody from there is going to make up a story just to get me in trouble? But that's what happened,
right.
And I just had to wait it out, you know. And so I didn't get, like, I understood, because, you know, when you have a past that I have, you know, come on, man, my crystal meth capsules were really yeast infection medication. Come on, you know, who's going to buy that? So I knew I had to just kind of, you know, wait for the storm to pass.
When I heard about the news, I was like, God dang, man, I can't believe that. I said, man. Sean's doing so good.
Yeah, right.
And so I was like, man, he can't have made a mistake. So what was the polygraph all about? I've never taken a polygraph. What did it do, hook you up with a bunch of electrodes?
Just put some stuff on, you know, like I think something on my chest and then some electrodes on, you know, like something on my fingers for my
palm. Were you nervous?
I was, even though I knew I was telling the truth. I was nervous because I was doing this live on my show, Steve, which my lawyer said, please don't do it on your show.
Really?
Yeah.
So how'd it go?
I passed.
What episode? So people can go back and watch the
show
on YouTube.
Wow. I can't even remember now, okay. But you know, it was in the April, or, you know, middle of May.
Well, what was the deal when they said that you had whatever they said you had on you? Weren't you in like a holding tank for a week or something like that?
A few days.
How was that? I've never been detained for anything like that, and I'm claustrophobic to begin with, so I can't imagine for whatever reason being cooped up in a cell, gimmick, whatever the story is. How did you handle that?
I handled it just fine because I wasn't coming down off of drugs or alcohol. You know, every other time I was in a jail cell here in L.A. County, which is about the worst place you can end up in a jail cell in, I was, you know, coming down off of some heavy-duty stuff, Steve.
Back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day. And so, you know, I didn't handle it well back then, you know. I was really actually just, I was kind of insane back then temporarily.
Right.
But so now, you know what, I knew I didn't do it. But I did know, okay, this, I'm going to take a hell of a hit PR-wise on this. I might get suspended or terminated, you know, from my WWE contract, which very cool of them to wait and wait it out and see how things went. Very grateful to him for that. But, you know, I just sat in there and thought about the dog I just rescued a few days earlier, you know, and things like that. And I was just like, you know, once this blows over, it's going to be a hell of a story to put in my book.
But wasn't it frustrating as a person knowing that you hadn't done anything wrong to be cooped up and not allowed to get out, and you're surrounded by four walls, a floor, and a ceiling?
Yeah.
And just at that level?
Yeah, it sucks, you know.
You're a grown man.
Yes, and your freedom taken away. And you know, and this little 4x8 or 6x8, I mean, it's a tiny little cell, solitary. You know, but, you know, you just do the best you can. I've been in way worse situations, and, man, it's all about the attitude. It, honestly, Steve.
So what kind of attitude do you achieve or attain if you're in that setting?
I just, the only way I can put it is just maintaining a positive attitude on things, which isn't always easy. Like, you know, just... without even having something like that happen. If you have like depression issues like I do, everything can be great and you can go into a depression. So, you know, I'm grateful that I have a pretty good set of tools in my toolbox now, you know, to use for situations like that.
So you didn't do the short-term deal and start doing tons of push-ups and stuff?
I did, Steve. I did, man. Leg lifts, push-ups, yeah. Hindu squats. Yeah, when they let me out of my cell to use the phone one time, like I was out like, and I started doing the step test, the Harvard step test, up and down the steps, and they kind of got hot at me and made me get back in my cell. And then, your clothes are all nasty. They didn't have the jumpsuits in the jail I was in. So, like, you know, I sat in my cell naked pretty much, you know, and cover myself with the sheet that you put over the mattress. It's kind of like a big bag. So I just got inside this bag and I just hung out in there so my clothes didn't get stinky.
Hey, one last question.
Oh, the food.
Question. I would make you
love the food, man.
But how embarrassing was that when did they arrest you in public?
Yes.
Put your hands behind your back and cuffs?
Oh, they did.
Dude,
yes.
How was that?
Well, you know.
Demoralizing?
Yeah. And there's like dehumanizing things that come along with it, you know, like bend over and cough and all that, you know.
Oh.
Whatever. You know, like I said, being sober, you know, and having a positive attitude about everything, it was kind of a piece of cake, man, as far as bad situations go.
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it because, right, man, I'm still feeling the effects of it, Steve.
Really?
Oh, yeah. As far as, you know, the bookings that haven't come back, you know, I mean, because, you know, rightfully so, a bunch of people are going to cancel. And nobody broke my doors down to fill my schedule back up. Yeah, it's starting to. But.
Okay. Oh, well, before we get to the next question, how is your show doing? X-Pac 1, 2, 3, 6?
Oh, it's great. I'm loving it. It's great.
How do you go about booking guests? Because sometimes, man, you know me for a while, but I mean, it's like we don't know each other like we're best buds. We're friends. We're good friends, but we never really hung out. You had your circle. I kind of had my thing going. So sometimes with regards to my show, you have my producer, Stacey, who puts the show together for me. But other than that, it's a one-man deal. It's just me. And so, man, sometimes, just like this weekend, I was like, you know, I called you. I knew that I want to get some shows in the bank because I was fixing to go into production for Broken Skull Challenge. But sometimes, man, you know, I was just starting looking through my iPhone, you know, scrolling through names. I don't want to call my buds.
Sure.
They're my buds. I don't want to infringe on them. And then sometimes I'll wait last minute. But with what you're doing with you've got more people on board.
Yes, I have a team, yeah.
Crew. So how do you go about booking your guests? Or they do that for you, or do they have ideas? Or does someone pitch you things like, hey, what about so-and-so come on the show? How do you do that?
Well, I have a co-host. Well, my first co-host, Christy, she's called Christy St. Cloud now. They hired her she's down at NXT now.
Okay.
And she was great. And, man, I can't say enough of positive things about her. What a hard worker and beautiful and great at her job. But, you know... besides all that, the value she brought, and like other people, you know, the value they bring is like they do things like they guest book or,
right.
you know, they call and they hound the people to get them to come on the show. And, you know, so I don't have to do that. I don't have to be the one that's a pain in the ass. And, you know, they just scheduling things, you know, and, you know, like formatting the show or whatever, because I do like a, an opening segment. We do like news or that, or, you know, when the G1 special was here,
yep.
you know, we did a lot of talking about that. Even though I didn't show up, I watched it.
I got a chance to go down the first night, cause I just want to watch the guys
work yeah.
in person. And then I got an invite. I was in the Access TV truck, and my stunt double from my movie days in Vancouver, Paul Lazenby, was down. Mm.
He just sent me his books, Paul did.
Oh, when we were yeah. Brothers, too?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yeah. Man, he's got some great stories if you have him on. He's a great guy. One of the few guys I invited to the Broken Skull Ranch way back in the day when I owned it. But what did you think about both nights of action? I didn't get a chance to see the second night, but I was there to watch all of the first night.
Well... They were both excellent nights.
The
in-ring stuff, for the most part, was top-notch. I mean, there was a couple of matches where, you know, like there was some 10-man, like, just get your, you know what, in matches. But, oh, God, man. Like okay, the first night, Kenny Omega and Mike Elgin, I thought they had a hell of a match. Big fan of Zack Sabre Jr.
Dude, I love the Zack Sabre Jr. and Juice Robinson.
Yes.
One of my favorite matches on a card. I loved all the technical work Zack Sabre did. And Juice Robinson, I didn't know that he'd been down in NXT. And I don't know what happened if the kid got heat on him or whatever, but he sure is turning into a hell of a hand down there in New Japan.
You know, like the majority of the time he was at NXT and FCW, all that, you know, to me, he didn't get his mean streak until he was on his way out the door. You know what I mean? That aggressive meat. And he showed it that night in his match with, you know, the fire and, you know.
Well, it was interesting walking backstage because I went down and met a couple of the guys. And
yeah.
when I first came in, it wasn't like they had, you know, it was at the Civic Center, whatever, in Long Beach.
Yeah, Long Beach Convention Center, yeah.
You know, it didn't have stadium seating. It was flat.
Yeah. Wasn't a fan of that.
They really dropped the ball on that.
Yeah.
And they said, hey, man, do you want to go to the Crow's Nest where they had one of the television cameras? I was like, no, man, I want a kayfabe. I don't want nobody to know
right.
I'm here. See, I don't want to steal anybody's thunder. I don't want to cause a spectacle. I want to be respectful. I'm just there to watch a show.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also want to watch Kenny Omega work live. So anyway, I was sitting in the production truck. But, yeah, what I noticed walking through that locker room, I met a lot of guys, probably, you know, 60% of them. Dude, it was very competitive. It was full of energy, and those guys are ready to go on. Maybe it was a little bit of nerves because they were doing that one show live.
Mm-hmm.
Other probably, well, live to broadcast. Whatever, so both were live.
Yeah, second one was live on New Japan World okay. site, and then they played, you know, the very next week on Access.
Okay, but man, it's, I don't know if there was nerves going on, but it felt, there's a bunch of alpha males back there. It was a very competitive feeling. Not a lot of, there wasn't no lollygagging, goosing and giggling.
Nobody playing Nintendo?
No, dude, it was serious. I rolled up in the back. Billy Gunn was working that night in that 8-man.
Yeah.
And so I got a chance to visit with him and met a couple of guys out there. But it was just, it was a cool atmosphere. It felt like a sporting event atmosphere.
Yeah, and I dig that.
I do too.
You know, I dig so many of the different ways that wrestling's presented right now. You know,
how with doing your show, and obviously both of you and I have been around the horn with several different wrestling organizations, but I think our heydays were, we had a great run WCW, but you know, kind of WWE
sure.
was our real stomping grounds.
For real, yeah.
And so that's what distilled the world that I come from, but I love all presentations of it. Doing your show and just trying to be in the know or present with all the wrestling scenarios. Do you go to any PWG?
I went to PWG the other night or last week.
I was going to go too, but I didn't. How was it?
It's a fun time. Like, but man, when you go in there, like I felt bad for coming in and taking any of the oxygen out of the room because man, it was so freaking hot in there, Steve. I mean, guys were coming. I think Young Bucks came back, and that's the hottest I've ever been in a match in my entire life. And these people are crammed in there. I mean, crammed. There was a – and, like, just a line to the beer, just to get a beer, was wrapped around the ring twice.
Yeah.
You know, and then you got like Adam Jones from Tool sitting in the crowd. You got Topanga from the Boy Meets World or whatever the hell that show was. And I guess James Franco was there the month before, you know. It's the place to be, and I understand. I mean, I dig the wrestling there too, man.
Yeah, yeah. But from what I've understood is pretty much that's kind of like everybody buys in, everything but the kitchen sink.
Yeah.
A lot just like high spot city.
Yeah. Get you dives outside the ring in the very first match. Yeah.
So why is that the place to be seen for a lot of these celebrities around Los Angeles?
I don't know. It's just because of that. You know, that punk rock mentality, like, you know, it's not like this is an exclusive club, fight club. Don't tell anyone, all that, you know. Yeah. It was that kind of thing. And you know, like, I mean, I even heard that Ronda Rousey showed up one time without a ticket and they weren't going to let her in.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I swear.
Hey, what we're talking about New Japan Pro Wrestling coming to Long Beach, and you watch both shows. I went to the first show, and then the next day I heard that Okada was at a WWE Monday Night Raw.
Sitting in gorilla position the whole night.
What's up with that?
Why not, right? I mean, I don't see a problem with it.
No, like, I mean, personally, I think it's cool as hell.
Me too, yeah. And I guess, you know, he's just visiting friends, if I had to guess. And maybe if he's smart, doing a little homework, putting all that in his computer.
What? Tell me, I want to hear your assessment of him as a worker in the ring, because there's a couple of questions about Kenny Omega coming up a little bit, but talk to me about your thoughts of Okada.
Wow. When I was in Mexico, he came through for like a show here and there, and like I even seen him in TNA at one point, and especially in TNA, they really didn't do anything with him. He just has this kind of a charisma, like, you know, I don't speak Japanese, but have you ever seen his promos?
No.
Man, and his promos are great. I'm not going to sit and tell you the things I think's wrong with his work, because we could pick anybody's work apart. I just think I can understand why they're going with him. Let's just put it that way. Hell of a drop kick.
God dang. He does have a hell of a drop kick, but I'll tell you what, if you saw that match with him and Cody Rhodes, and Cody put him in that calf slicer, calf killer, whatever it was, and boy, all of a sudden Okada went to selling. Trash truck in the background. We're rolling sound at 317 Gimmick Street. If you hear that noise, that's what it is. Back to the match. God dang, dude, when he started selling, I don't want to relive parts of the podcast that I've done the last few weeks when New Japan Talent was in town, but holy smokes, that kid can sell.
Yeah.
And you know what he's really good at? The subtleties or the nuances. I mean, not too much. We might watch a match here in a little bit, and it's a classic match between Doug Furness, Crawford, and
Doug Furness, Dan Crobbett, Kobashi, and Kikuchi.
Kikuchi, yeah. I always want to say it was Phil LaFon.
Yeah, Phil LaFon, Dan Crobbett.
Dan Crobbett, yes, yeah. Anyway, but we're going to watch the way those guys sell. But man, that kid, when he goes to selling, I think in today's United States scene, as far as WWE goes, it's an oversell.
Yeah.
And it's almost a pantomime, and it's losing the effect because it's too much. I think guys need to dial it back. For a while, they weren't selling nothing. Now I think they're overselling. But I want to nitpick that. I want to go back to Okada. Holy smokes, that kid can sell his ass off. And also, one of the things I liked during that match was that they didn't go crazy trying to work that crowd. The match we're going to watch in a little bit, and like we were talking, they keep the majority, 98% of their attention within the confines of that 20x20 ring. LaFon, Crawford will go to the crowd a couple of times because they're kind of working heels because they're from the States, they're working in Japan. And he'll do a couple of things just for a little extra pizzazz. But it looks like an athletic contest. And I just think Okada, you know, when you think, what does he do that's really spectacular? He's got a great drop kick. He sells awesome. He has great fire. But he doesn't do, with that first match, that 47-minute match with Omega, and then the 60-minute Broadway, there was a couple of crazy bumps in there. But, I mean, the guy doesn't do anything that's super crazy as far as high-risk maneuvers.
Yes, he keeps it to the basics.
Kid. He's bigger than you think he is when you walk up to him. He's about 6'3", 220, but he's a tall 6'3", 220, so he takes up space. great looking robes. You can get their robes out of the equation if you want to, but it's part of the presentation. But he's just a good looking kid. He's not overly flashy.
Right, and it's not like he has this Greek god body either.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination. But god dang, he just has a, I wouldn't necessarily say he's white meat. He just plays just the straight baby face.
Yeah. He's a little too pretty to be considered white meat.
You think so?
A tad bit, but the selling's definitely white meat selling.
Yeah. And he'll sell anything. I don't know what it is about the kid that I think sets him apart, because you saw the two matches with Omega, right?
What
did you think about those matches? Meltzer gave one 6 stars, the other 6.25 stars. Okay, well, whatever the star rating is.
Hey, you know what? Meltzer invented the star scale, so he can add a star if he wants to.
More power to him. But I will say, and because I've got a couple of matches, going back to Brody Hansen versus Terry Funk and Dory Funk Jr.
I remember that one.
Just barn burners. The match we're going to talk about in this episode or the next episode is a barn burner. It's 5 stars, only 5 stars. But god dang, dude, those guys, the thing I like about the tag match we're going to watch is the physicality of that match. And so, like, as technical and as many great things as Okada and Omega did in both of those matches, it's a different style.
Yeah.
And so if you're just a smash mouth, strong style guy, they might not be up your alley. But as far as hitting the gas pedal, vicious attacks, going for the win, all of that is there. In the 60 minute, I could see that they're buying time.
Sure.
With some of those initial covers. But both of them were just tremendous, fantastic matches.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a different, it's a newer style, which the business has evolved.
When you're doing a 45 minute or something like that, I can't imagine being able to start the match off with the same kind of intensity and end it with that kind of wow, man, we only have so much gas in the tank.
Right.
Wow. So I get it, the way they were pacing it. And the thing that this is just me, Steve. The spots that are done in wrestling, I'd like to see them be shorter, more concise, like, and not look like spots anymore. Like when I see Brock and Joe, or those guys, or matches like that, you're not seeing tackle, drop down, leapfrog. Man, I kind of want to see the wrestling get away from that a little bit.
What would it go to?
Just change the spots up a little bit, because everything's so routine.
Everything is so routine. But on this, when we watched the match with Doug Furness and Phil LaFon against Kikuchi and Kobashi, watch the way Furness hits the ropes, and to a degree a little bit less than him, his tag team partner. But holy smokes, and they're not doing any outlandish spots.
They're not doing really spots in that
but
sense.
You talk about hitting the ropes like a Mack truck. And that guy was a stud running back in Tennessee. He's a world-class powerlifter, and he left powerlifting to get into the business of pro wrestling. He's still considered among the greatest of all time, so no telling what he could have done him. But just watching that guy hit the ropes, I love that type of intensity, that speed, and that, because that looks like a shoot.
That's right.
So I got to, before we just keep going on and on and on talking about stuff in the ring, let's get back to a couple of questions.
Okay.
Hey, here's an interesting question. How would you rate your feud with Ric Flair? You two seem to really dislike each other, and if it was a work, you had me. Thoughts on working with the Nature Boy, Taylor Jones?
Oh, yeah. No, there was bad blood there, Steve, and it made for some good TV. I'm going to tell you why, because, I'll give you, the first thing that got me going. And trust me, the boys, stirred me up, too, on this, especially, like, Hogan and, Scott Steiner and different guys like that. Go ahead.
Okay, before you get into this story, let's take a pause for the calls, a word from a sponsor to keep the show on.
All right.
Open 2 cans of audio whoop ass twice a week because of people like you and the sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. I'm coming back with X-Pac, my good buddy Sean Waltman, and he's about to tell us what's going on with the feud and him and Ric Flair. If you're looking to buy a new or used vehicle, then you need to download the TrueCar app or check out TrueCar.com. TrueCar gives you the price and information you need to feel confident about your vehicle purchase. When you register with TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local area paid for the car you want. And from there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. TrueCar shows you real pricing on actual inventory, so you see competitive pricing offered to you by TrueCar certified dealers for vehicles that are actually on their lots. And you'll also see all the dealer incentives before you get to the lot, so you can feel confident about the price when you show up. TrueCar makes car buying easy, no matter if you're looking for a brand new or used vehicle, and the stats do not lie. Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. There's over 13,000 dealers in that network with some 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available. So do yourself a favor and go to TrueCar for your next car buying experience. TrueCar doesn't just make the process easier, it'll also save you some money. TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
HBO's Game of Thrones is back for its 7th season. Winter is finally here, and so are the White Walkers. Will the Seven Kingdoms of Westeros survive the threat from the North, or will they fall in the looming war for the Iron Throne? After you're done watching an episode, join the discussion here on the Game of Thrones After Show on Podcast One. Every week, our hosts discuss each episode in detail, from shocking twists to fan theories, as the series chronicles the violent struggle among the realm's noble families for ultimate power. Join the fray every week on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
The Steve Austin Show.
The Steve Austin Show.
All right, here we are. We're back. Okay, so what's up? Was there legit heat? How did it get going?
Yeah. Well, okay. Flair was out for quite a while, like almost a year, with a shoulder injury. He had surgery on his shoulder, and if you know anything about Rick, he never had that much time off. He always said time off is the wrestler's worst enemy, and so anyways, it was a big deal. He was coming back, and his big comeback match was going to be in Charlotte, and it was going to be him, Roddy Piper, and Kevin Green, against Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and me. And Flair wanted it to be Hogan in the match. And I totally understand why. But at the time, I'm hungry, Steve. I'm hungry, and I don't give a at all. And so when they told me that they were trying to, Flair don't want you in Piper Day, they don't want you in a match, they want Hogan. Boy, that was all I needed. And I went out and I just started cutting these promos on. And I'm not the promo guy, but when you got something real to say, you got something real to say.
Right.
And so, the first thing I went out and it was like cheap shot, talk about respect. How much respect does it steal on, Buddy Rogers gimmick, things like that, whatever.
Right.
It was just PS,
right.
But I was just, taking real shots. And it kind of, things started getting heat. Actually, at one point, we had this face-to-face confrontation with Mean Gene, in front of the people. And, I'm trying to go toe-to-toe with him on the mic, and he's just killing me. Killing me, Steve. So I, bowed up to him, and he pushed me. And so I went wham, and I smacked the living crap out of him. I mean, his face turned bright red, and he chased me around the building. And, I was pretty quick back then. There's no way he was catching me. So it kind of looked foolish. And we got back. I thought, oh, man, I think we might have to fight here. And Rick was like, oh, that was good. That was good. I'm like, whew. I'm glad you said that because I didn't want to fight. I don't want to fight ever.
Yeah. So what ended up happening?
I'll just skip to the six man. So, we told them we're not putting them over. So not only, not getting Hogan, but you're going to have your comeback match in your hometown and you're not going to get put over. So that really drove those guys nuts. And then at the last minute.
Who had the book?
Well, Eric was the boss.
Right.
But, Kevin and Scott kind of calling their own.
Okay, keep going.
So, and how are you going to make somebody, no matter who has the book, if somebody don't want to do something, it's really hard to send them out there and do it. But, at last minute, we said, you know, we told him we're all three putting y'all over and right in the middle. But we had him worked into a shoot the whole time, Steve, and it created really good TV.
Right.
And I'm so honored I got to work with Rick. I'm so honored. And I had a match with him, a singles match that was, I thought, a really good match, but it was at Hog Wild in front of, you know, in the wrong setting, you know, outdoors at Sturgis with the bikers revving their bikes up and, you know, but anyways, yeah, it was pretty heavy. It was pretty heavy.
But you're, are you friends with Flair now?
I would like to think, that we're on very good terms. Yes. Yeah, we get along real good now.
He's my favorite pro wrestler of all time.
Me too.
Oh, yours too?
Yeah. I mean, at least there. I don't have someone that's
right.
higher than Ric Flair, put it that way.
Yeah, first of all, he's my favorite pro wrestler of all time. If you look up pro wrestler in the dictionary, there's a picture of Ric Flair in my mind.
Sure.
But also, when you look for shooting world champion, I mean, the world champion who actually traveled the big loop.
Yeah.
And got people over and went Broadways, 60-minute Broadways, or beat people or made people, then beat them or whatever. He was the last guy to truly do that at the highest level.
He was the best ever at making chicken salad out of chicken crap.
What, think about the careers that he made of a couple of guys, you know, but also made countless others, but yeah. A few specifically huge superstars based on their matches with one Ric Flair.
That's right.
So, I mean, the guy, yeah. He got there with a broomstick, and the broomstick actually had a chance to be the world champion because he's working with Ric Flair.
Oh, yeah.
And Rick could make that broomstick look like he could beat him.
And, oh, do you know about the time that we dressed up like, you know, like those guys?
No, what happened?
Well, you know, Arn had this big retirement speech, and it was like, you know, a real tearjerker, legit. Like, yeah. I even cried.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because I cry a lot. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I don't.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much to get me emotional about stuff. But so I did, man. It was a very emotional deal with Arn, and Rick's in the ring. And so, you know, the next week, Terry Taylor, Rick's friend, had this idea, you know, for us to dress up like the Four Horsemen. And I got to be Rick, and, you know, Kevin got to be Arn, and, you know, there was a lot of bad blood over that.
Right.
And because, you know, we actually borrowed Arn's cooler, you know, out of, you know, the styrofoam cooler.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we painted, you know, when you, I thought it was a terrible idea. I didn't like the whole idea to dress up like, you know, it'd never been done before. And but then when I finally acquiesced to it, I'm like, well, if we're going to do it, we better do it. And so, like, you know, I imitated Flair pretty damn good because I'm, you know, lived in Minnesota quite a while. So I have, and Flair still has a little bit of Minnesota accent. And also, I just from watching him since I'm 10 years old, man, I know how Ric Flair talks. So I had this nose. They put this fake nose on me, and they put this pump under my, you know, sleeve and to where every time Arn would talk, I would squeeze this bulb and go like this, and water would come squirting down. It looked like I was crying.
Yeah,
but it got mean-spirited. You know, we played Arn out to be a, you know, Otis the Town Drunk, basically. And it just, it hurt feelings, man. We did some pretty good business off it. They had to change the whole War Games main event to have us in War Games after that. So, I mean, good business came out of it, but looking back on it, man, like, I wish we would have done something. I don't like to have too many regrets, but it bums me out that we hurt feelings like that.
How did you make amends with Arn?
I don't know that we ever really had a chance to. You know,
because I think it was an emotional time for him. Because, I mean, the reason he was getting out of business because a stack of dimes was bothering
his
neck.
Yeah.
And Arn, Jesus Christ, him and Ole, and him and Tully. I was a big Arn and Ole fan. I like both of them, but Arn and Ole, man, those matches against they had with the Rock and Roll Express or anybody, just they're one of my favorite tag teams of all time. Just money together. And so I remember, you know, when I came into WCW, we went to Japan a couple of times, and me and Arn were drinking on the airplane, and all of a sudden we get out, and there's a tournament, And it's like, are you ribbing me? I'm working with Arn right out of the gate. Just got to Japan. Drank the whole way over. It was hotter than blazes in that yeah. building. Me and Arn are out there to a symphony of silence for yeah. 10-12 minute match.
Almost that's the worst,
word,
man.
Almost not a word was said the entire match. And Arn was an established veteran. I would,
yeah.
you know, I had 3-4 years in me. I was pretty decent at the time, but I'm nowhere near Arn's level. And there we were in Japan, and I thought we really stunk the joint out. And Arn's one of my all-time favorite workers. So, you know, the times that I got a chance to wrestle Arn, the times that I got to wrestle Ric Flair, you know, right before my big walkout, I worked with him in a cage in Columbus, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And I was in heaven that time. But it was like I just got the news about doing the JLB for Brock, and I wasn't in a good space then.
Okay.
And I think I worked with Flair another time. But I was never at my best. You know, when I work with either guy, I would have loved to work a program with Rick or Arn or, you know, any of those guys from back in those days when they were at their physical and mental prime and I was at my physical and mental prime so that we could combine and really
yeah.
have the clash that you dream about having with some
sure.
of your favorites of all time.
Oh, yeah. I was telling you, I watched a little bit of tag match you and Pillman had with Arn and Rick. And I was really enjoying that. It looked like, it looked a lot like the match, the six man I had with Rick. Trying to get him to be a baby face is like pulling teeth.
Let me ask you, Rick like Morgan Hill.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this. Like, I remember when I was coming up, and you, like you said earlier, a while ago, you said you were real hungry.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we all want to stay hungry during our whole careers, but when you're just breaking in and you're starting to finally make some progress or you finally get a break, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, climbing up the damn ladder, whatever you got to do. I mean, you know, nothing dirty, but I mean, hey, that's the business, right?
Yeah.
And so,
sometimes people get walked on. You might not intentionally to it, but sometimes they're in the way, man.
You look at talent differently because back in the day when Shawn Michaels, who's kind of always been an epic performer, but back in the day, everybody, he was still the kind of the standard.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, you kind of blow him off. It's like, he's high spot artist. All of a sudden you get in the same territory with him and he's lighting it up every single night. And you're like, no, that guy's really that good. And
yeah,
he's probably even better than that. Same thing with Flair. Hey, how good can he be? You know, and all of a sudden I'm in the ring, I'm tagging
yeah.
with him. And all of a sudden, he tags me in, and all of a sudden, you're following Ric Flair's tag out.
Yeah.
What are you going to do to follow, you know, the 16-time world champion, however many times he's been world champion? You're following Ric Flair. So all of a sudden, you think, man, he does the thing in a turnbuckle, you know, what if throwing off he gets launched off the top turnbuckle,
yeah.
backdrop. All of a sudden, you get in there, and you see how good that son of a gun is. It's like, yeah, I get it now.
Yeah.
But when you're competitive and you're in the same trenches, you kind of just want to blow them off, or you're not blowing them off, you respect them, like, nah, I'm better than that.
Sure.
All of a sudden you get in there face to face with them or tag to tag with them, like, yeah, they really are that good.
Yeah. But
you
but
like
it's
that, though?
Sure. Absolutely, Steve. And even after I got in the ring with a lot of those guys, I still thought I was better than them. Whether I was or not, that's another story.
But I will say, you know, with respect to Flair, I mean.
I'm not talking about them guys.
That guy always had the gas tank from hell. He never blew up.
Never.
Neither did Shawn Michaels. So it's like, yeah, I mean, right when you're so caught up in trying to learn the business, you want to pass those guys up. Hey, easier said than done.
Sure. When I worked with Rick, I just basically did his stuff with him.
Right.
You know, I had him backdrop, bounce me out of the corner backdrop, you know, all that, you know, so.
Just so you could.
Oh, yeah. I even did the walk out of the corner and took the face plant for him.
He had a big, Ole has been on record as having a big discrepancy with not taking the forward bump like that. He just thought that was over the top. He did it every match or whatever. I'm like,
sure.
To me, when I think about it, and we'll move on to the next question.
After okay.
This, a lot of times the stuff, because I was talking with Sean on the phone last night, we're talking about a couple of matches to talk about. He has a match with Barry Windham. He takes that bump. We had a couple of classics with Barry Windham. There's one match in particular. It was a tag match. Dusty Rhodes, Mans with the Hands of Stone, Ron Garvin versus Ric Flair and Arn Anderson.
Yeah.
And Rick takes that gimmick bump. He's heading over to Arn to make that tag. Ronnie Garvin just pulls him up by the back of his trunk and just chops him right across the chest. To me, the point I'm trying to make is Ric Flair was the wrestler's wrestler who had the X factor of entertainment that he threw sure. in with all of his legit real deal stuff. So he was a personification to me of what a pro wrestler was all about.
Yeah. But when I got to the point where I was smart enough to know what was up, like, it didn't bother me that I saw Rick take the corner, you know, the flip in the corner right. and, you know, all that at the same time in the match. Like, that was, if I didn't see that, I'd have been pissed.
Right.
That's the thing, Steve. If that's Ric Flair's stuff, and I want to see it.
Right.
You know? I don't know, man. You know, but I do understand where somebody like Ole would have a problem with that. I get it.
But it's almost
come on, man.
Like,
you got to change with,
like,
the times.
Okay, let's look at this. Like, a wrestler is almost like a musician. They're singing what's in their wheelhouse.
Yeah.
You're doing what's in your wheelhouse. Or same as a stand-up comedian, or same, you're a performer.
I always tell people, like, I do a medley of my greatest hits in my matches now. Like, when last time I saw George Jones, he did a medley of his greatest hits.
Yeah.
And so that's what I do. And nobody wants to hear anything off my new album, Steve. Nothing. They just want to hear the greatest hits.
Yeah, that's funny. I was sitting there watching, an interview the other night with Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden, and he was talking. They came out with the album 17 or whatever. I think the interview was about a year old, and he goes, "Man, he likes singing the old stuff, but he enjoyed singing the newer stuff. But the fans, well, they have many new fans, and they're, like he says, bigger now than they ever were back in their prime because the music audience or whatever has grown that much." But, it's just like to go back to wrestling, you got things that are in your wheelhouse, and you play or do what's in your wheelhouse. You know, when I look back at what I did, I mean, Jesus Christ, Sean, middle finger, stomp, elbow, eye poke.
Yeah.
You know.
But it took a lot of work. It took a lot of work for you to whittle it down to that many things, though, didn't it?
I had like 6 number one hits.
Yeah.
And that was it. I put the 6 number
That's
one hits
in
almost
hits.
Every match.
That's a lot of hits.
But
Steve,
here's the thing.
I only have 4.
I didn't try to always get in my trademark stuff into every single match. But I could have, because I only had so few trademark things. But did you ever wrestle the guys that always wanted to get their stuff in? I mean, every single time they get that offense.
Oh, yeah.
It gets old.
Yeah. Well, I used to be one of those guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I did that to Rick Martel one time.
What happened?
He got hot.
Well, he's a savvy veteran.
And apparently I got ribbed by him, and I don't even know what it was to this day. I mean, because Kurt used to always slip a little, what Martel did to you. And I'd be like, what did he do? You know? But I remember one time going to Martel, and we had this match laid out, and Martel was awesome. I loved working with him.
I loved watching his work.
Oh, he was so good to work with. I just listened to him, and, we go out there and just, not have anything called. I mean, nothing. But, we did have this match, and I was like, I have this one thing I do and this thing, and I just don't think we're doing enough. And I didn't mean to come off disrespectful, Steve, but and I think it was Brooklyn Brawler smarting me up that I had heat, which was cool.
Yeah.
That was very nice of Brooklyn Brawler and Steve to do, because nobody else was beating my door down to tell me. And so then Rick actually pulled me aside and kind of cut promo on me. And he said, "You don't understand, man. I could chop, make you look like crap out there, you couldn't do anything about it." And I'm like, "Man, I really didn't mean any disrespect. Please forgive me, And I got it,
And how many years were you in the business when this happened?
Probably 6, 7.
So you were at that hungry stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was still new in WWF.
Yeah.
And
so how did the match go?
Oh, we had great matches. I can't say enough about the matches I had with Rick.
Hey, man, tell me about this match. We were talking, and you said, "Hey, man, did you ever see the match between Ric Flair and Buddy Rogers?"
Yeah, did you?
Resonation Boy. I watched it.
What do you think?
It's one of those only clips. Well, yeah. I mean, it was some footage. There was no, like you said, there's no commentary over it. I didn't really know what was happening a lot of the time. Flair was on offense
for
a lot of the 5 to 6 minute clip.
But could you tell he was like the crowd favorite?
I didn't really get a sense of it because my wife was sleeping, so I had to sound kind of muted.
Okay.
I don't hear very good anyway. But I just saw Flair was the aggressor, but in the end, Buddy was holding his hands up. Did he get the win? What happened? I didn't see the finish.
I didn't. I don't know. I just was.
Okay,
that's a good question. I just
and mentioning the screen gems, I did watch that clip, but then there was another screen gem that came on after that, and it was the Lightning Kid or the 1-2-3 Kid versus Jerry Lynn from GWF. How early? You had to been in the business about, I'm just guessing, 3 or 4 years.
About 3-4 years. You're right. Yeah.
And you had that arm bar on him.
Yeah.
It wasn't real snugged up. And what do you remember about that match?
That match was a 2 out of 3 fall match.
Yes.
Okay. And we had to, the only way we could beat the other guy was with our finish. And the finish that I had somehow come up with was a tombstone pile driver, and his was a sleeper hold. Now, when you do a match like that, it really limits like the other false finishes you can do. So I remember that being a problem. I remember looking back on it, and I didn't understand at the time that that was limiting things, you know? I didn't get it back then.
Right. Well, so then you go to...
Probably the people that booked the match didn't get it either.
Yeah, they just put a match out there.
Yeah.
Hey, this should work.
Yeah.
On paper, it looks like it should work.
We tried.
You go to sleep on the first finish.
Yeah.
I hit the stop button at that point. What was the second and third finish?
I just hit him with the tombstone and then...
Even it up 1-1?
Yeah. That's about... I think that was about almost an hour-long match, actually. I think they chopped it up, but Raven come out and he tries to interfere and ends up hitting me and I get put in a sleeper and I lose the title. There was a few good things in that match. Like, you know, people like they will talk about certain matches and they'll go, oh, that was a great match. Or your match with Sabu was great. Maybe for back then, but when I look back on it, I could pick it all apart.
Well, yeah, you can pick it all apart because you weren't at your prime yet, and nor was Jerry Lynn, because, I mean, both of you guys were lights-out workers. So had you – I'm sure you did probably many times, but that was on the screen gems, and I just saw just a few minutes of that match. Whatever happened to Jerry Lynn? He just recently retired about it.
A few years back,
yeah.
You know, his back was bothering him, and he just has a normal life, like in Tennessee somewhere. And he gave me he left a message on my phone 2 nights ago. I didn't know what number it was, but when I checked the message, it was Jerry.
Had a lot of great matches. He's really? A really, really, really good worker.
So good, yeah.
He doesn't. I don't think he gets a lot of credit.
Because you know, wasn't dynamic on the mic, and extremely nice individual, and didn't have enough a-hole in him.
Right.
You know. Sometimes you got to have that. You got to be able to tap into that inner a-hole. Can I say that on the family?
Yeah,
family?
You can say asshole on the family.
Okay.
Hey, listen. Let's do another question. Hey, man. Hey, love the podcast. My question for X-Pac is, what opponent would you have loved to face during your time in WCW who you never got a chance to wrestle? BJ Joshi.
Wow.
Anybody in that locker room that strikes a memory that you didn't get a chance to work with that you would have liked to?
I'd have liked to work with Mach in a singles match.
That'd have been cool.
Yeah, we teamed, which was very cool.
What was your memories of that guy just being around him, the times that you were just in a locker room type setting? Well, I mean, because I met him down in Orlando. I did the favors for him in a just a real short match that I don't even remember. But I was always a huge Macho Man fan, a huge fan.
Yeah.
But the times I've seen him do interviews, I mean, he's like always in that character.
Yeah, that's not really like, I mean,
it's not
that's
a stretch. It's kind of him.
It's really him. Yeah. Like people go, oh, yeah, he put that voice, how he does that voice. I'm like, that's really his voice. And he really does talk like that. And he really was kind of wound really tight. And, you know, he was a little bit on the paranoid side always. You know, very intense. I remember Lanny. I had Lanny, his brother Lanny, on my show, and like he kind of took exception to what everyone, how they, you know, kept using the word intense to describe Randy. But I like, and I understand, you know, maybe people might take that the wrong way, but
I don't know why they take intense the wrong way.
Well,
I mean, he just was, to me, he seemed very serious, intense. That's the only way you can describe him, a bundle of energy.
Yeah, and it really was the case, you know. And I was just, I was really fortunate, Steve, to have been able to get close to him, because when I first started, like, if you look at that match with me and Jerry Lynn, like, I'm wearing Randy's boots in that match. Yeah, the yellow boots with the white stars on the side. Got them from his mom and dad, because I couldn't afford a pair of boots when I started. And had his yellow yellow knee pads too. So he knew, I knew his mom and I knew his dad. So he let me in, and he didn't let a whole lot of people in, Steve. Yeah.
Was he a guy, you know, like, man, there's always a bunch of comedians backstage. Arn Anderson was one of the funniest guys I know. Dean Malenko's another funny guy. But there are certain guys, I mean, so, I mean, like, a lot of times, back in the day especially, I mean, you'd be back there center stage, they have a little bit of monitors in the different dress rooms, and Arn's back there, you know, the king of the locker room, just zinging everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Manners. I mean, it was serious, but you work at center stage.
Kurt had some good ones for Randy. Yeah.
So, Was he a guy that would laugh when people popped a good joke?
Yes, but a lot of people were afraid to, like, ever mess with him. You know, nobody wanted to rip Randy or whatever, but, like, Kurt Hennig, he didn't care. Yeah. Certain, you know, guys didn't care. And Kurt used to, like, talk about, like, he said, he's like, Randy, I got this great merchandise idea for you. We take the cowboy hat and we put some, the straw from the brooms, and we stick the straw from the brooms in there. You know, I was just messing with Randy about his hair and things like that. And I remember one time, you know, everybody was carrying Halliburton briefcases back in the day, right?
If you had to, even if you had to mortgage your house,
that's right, Halliburton
to be one of the boys.
Yeah, the silver, you know, the kind of looked, it's like the Airstream camper briefcases. So Randy comes and, like, we called it the shed of Burton, because it was like a and, you know, Randy was tight with the dollar, and it was just like an imitation Halliburton. It looked like it was made out of shed material. So, you know, some of us got him for that. And I remember one time he was real, real funny about his hair, you know, and we were in Israel, and somehow he got his paddle brush or something tangled in his hair, and he couldn't get it out. And he thought he was going to have to cut his hair. And, I mean, he was freaking out. I can't remember. Somebody just worked on it for, I don't know, it must have been about an hour, and got it out for him. He was pretty, he was pretty grateful, man.
Why was his hair such a mess?
I don't know. It was just really dry, and it was like, you know, it wasn't his best feature. It's like mine, isn't it, these days?
But don't be so hard on yourself.
Oh, trust me. It's pretty bad these days.
What was your favorite Macho Man moment?
That's a tough one. That's a real tough one for me. I don't know, man. I don't know, Steve. I like the early stuff. Like, I like the stuff with him and Lawler in Memphis. I like a lot of that stuff.
Dude, that was some serious stuff.
Yeah.
And that was, it was almost like, it was almost, of course, when I was watching that, I was much younger. So it almost came across like a shoot.
It kind of was at first, you know?
Yeah, well, it was almost like an invasion.
Yeah, because, you know, they had their promotion, and that was out of Lexington, and that's, you know, that's, share the same territory, a lot of the same territory. Yeah.
When Macho got to the WWF, he had been in the business for what? 8, 9 years?
I don't even know. I'm not sure.
But, I mean, already a well-oiled machine inside the ring. Go ahead.
But it wasn't like he didn't go to a lot of different territories, because they were kind of blackballed. You know, the family was.
Right.
So, I mean, I think the only territories he really worked in was Memphis before he went to, you know, WWE and his dad's.
I wonder what Vince was thinking when he saw this guy, because, you know, when you see him, you see the guy's got star written all over him way back in the day. All of a sudden he gets to the machine, the WWF, and, you know, then they call him the Macho Man, and the big robes, a little bit more budget for the stuff. You know, then it turned into a spectacle, and an intense spectacle that could work his ass off. So he's an attraction and a major star. I just wonder what Vince was thinking, or what he thinks when he sees someone that has potential, and then that person ends up realizing their potential.
I'm guessing, and this is pure speculation because I never asked Vince about this, but I'm going to guess that almost from the get-go when he saw him, he knew he was going to make him champ at some point.
Right.
I really think so.
Right.
Because, I mean, I've seen Vince get that type of thing in his head before. Like, I mean, he's, you know, I mean, I I don't know. I really think that's probably what happened with him.
Hey, last question before we stop this podcast and we're going to start up another one. Hi, fellas. Why do you two think that Attitude Era, Vince Russo, etc. are hated by a lot of today's fans? For me, 98 to 03 was the greatest period of the WWE/F, as it was always fun and you never knew what would happen next. Thanks for entertaining me over the years. Ambrose from England. Yeah, that's a weird question because
yeah.
I know that there's an ongoing feud, whatever's going on between Vince Russo and Jim Cornette, and I don't know anything that's going on, so I'm not going to get into it.
Right.
But, man, Vince Russo seems to be such a polarizing guy in today's landscape. Maybe he always has been, but I always got along with the guy, and I still do to this day. I have him on the show a couple times a year because I enjoy talking to him, and we're pretty good friends. We don't call, we don't text, but I enjoy the guy, so... Does he have heat with you or any of the people that you know? How do you guys stand?
We've had our major differences, but I can honestly tell you I've never like had a personal problem with Vince, and I like the guy. I like him. He's been on my show. I've done his. And just like you, and I think you and I might be the only two that have done that,
right.
If you really think about it. And I made a lot of money at a time when Vince was one of the – you know, main writers of our show.
Why do you think he elicits such strong emotions?
Well, I think he provokes it. I think he does a lot of it, you know, purposely, you know, for
you think
attention.
He's working an angle?
I think so. But, you know, he might say otherwise, and I'm not going to say he's lying. I mean, I don't know. I think he gives himself too much credit, and I think most people don't give him enough credit.
Interestingly said. I like the guy.
Yeah.
Hey, man, let's start up another podcast.
Okay.
Thanks. Hey, before we stop,
yeah,
tell people how they can listen and watch your show.
They can go, like, you can get it on iTunes. If you're not an iTunes person, it's on pretty much any other you know, whether it be Podbean or Acast or, you know, anything, SoundCloud, Xbox 12360, or you can check it out on YouTube as well, After Buzz TV.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cues. Time to wrap up this podcast and ride off into the sunset and continue getting ready to film Broken Skull Challenge starting next week. Big shout out and thank you to Sean Waltman, X-Pac, coming by the crib today and shooting a breeze with me. Got two shows done. This one played today, as you heard. Got another one coming down the pike. Thank you, Sean, for coming by. Hey, while me and Sean were sitting there talking, we actually were going to break down a couple of matches together. And we started breaking one down, and it just didn't seem to flow like we wanted it to flow. And we were just kind of sitting there watching the computer screen rather than talk about the match. We got to talking about WrestleMania 10, the ladder match between the one and only Shawn Michaels and the one and only Razor Ramon. So I got a chance to, when Sean left, I put the match back on my computer screen and watched it myself. I checked it out on Daily Motion. That is my video for you guys to watch. WrestleMania 10 ladder match between Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon. God dang. I forgot how good this match was. It is, when I watch this match, I think precision and I think execution. And watch what these guys do. The punches look great. Razor's selling his ass off. Sean always does as well, but Razor, the bigger opponent in this, just sells like $1 million. They get so much mileage out of the spectacular things that they're doing. And just setting the template for, you know, the ladder matches that would fall after this particular match. But just an incredible match. The timing, everything was just executed. There was just one or two things that I can nitpick on, but I won't. It was just so good. And then just the finish when Sean takes that amazing bump off that ladder, splits the top rope crotch, then gets his leg hung in like a snare trap while Razor gets up to the top of the ladder, gets the belt. Sean makes that last desperate lunge. They had the crowd hook, line, and sinker. It was a tremendous crowd. The crowd was invested. It was a great atmosphere. They set the tone. Just everything, the speed, the cadence, the rhythm of the match was spectacular. And it was just an awesome match. If you haven't seen that, it's very refreshing to watch these guys, because I think one time Sean makes a signal, almost like Razor used to make his signal before he would hit his finish. Other than that, they did not play to the crowd. They owned that crowd and put on a display of professional wrestling that involved climbing up a ladder to retrieve an Intercontinental Championship belt. As a matter of fact, I guess they were unifying the Intercontinental Championship, whatever it was. But, man, you talk about pro wrestling at its finest. Just two guys that were just absolute masters. Razor specifically at his character. Shawn Michaels is a performer, as I've said and as many have said, the greatest in-ring performer in the history of the business and one of the all-time greats, the leader on the greatest matches of all time. I guess he has 11 matches or something in the top matches of all time. So Shawn Michaels' reputation and record speaks for itself. But God dang, as a huge Scott Hall fan, I mean, he was awesome in this match as well. Check out that match. It's absolutely spectacular. I forgot how good it was. It holds up. It doesn't hold up. It sets the standard still today. That's how awesome this match was. Anyway, I'm rambling on because I love that match so much. And it's just so refreshing when you see a match pulled off like this one was in such high-level fashion. Shout out to both guys. And Vince was great on commentary as well. Hey, man, we're about to go film Broken Skull Challenge. Production starting in a couple of days. Bunch of new T-shirts coming to ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin. I got a beer. It's called Broken Skull IPA. It's made by El Segundo Brewing Company. Pick it up at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. You can order from InsideTheCellar.com if you live in a state that they ship to. And I got one more thing to tell you all about. I got my own Amazon store, and that's where you can find the Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife and the new Working Man Knife. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. And before I thank my sponsors, you can find me and follow me on Twitter and Instagram at SteveAustinBSR. And thanks for supporting all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. I appreciate them. You can find all my sponsors at podcastone.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Coming up on Thursday's Unleashed Show, my old stunt double, Paul Lazenby. He's got a new book out, When We Were Bouncers 2. We're going to be talking about that. And he's got some stories about some of the stunts he's done in the movie business. He also just finished shooting the new Predator movie, and we'll see what he can tell us about that experience. And, of course, we're going to talk a little pro wrestling, too. He's a Kenny Omega fan, and he was at the New Japan G1 tournament in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago, and him and Don Callis gave me a ride back to the crib. He is coming up on Thursday's Unleashed Show. Hey, folks, the 60-second AP News headlines are coming up next. Until then, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Thanks for listening to The Steve Austin Show. Check out new episodes every Tuesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.